Check out Dobbs April deals before you make your next tire or service purchase, including super BOGO deals on oil changes, plus great deals on new sets of tires. Bumper to bumper, your dollars go further at Dobbs. Click on gotodobbs.com for April deals now.
Meet Sumner One, your go-to source for all things office technology. We're proud to be one of the largest independently owned providers in the region with 11 strategic locations across 5 states. At Sumner One, we specialize in workplace solutions, enterprise print, production print, large format solutions, cutting-edge document technology, and more. Quality, service, and innovation. That's the Sumner One advantage. Visit us online at sumneronecom. That's SUMNER1.com. Sumner One, welcome to the one place where everything works.
Joining us is the Hall of Famer, the Wizard, guy who knows a little bit about gold gloves, Ozzie Smith. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. What a facility, huh?
It's amazing.
I just had a chance to get a tour myself for the first time, and it's a beautiful space. I like it.
Did something stand out for you?
Go with the gold gloves over there.
That's what I was going to say.
But no, they did a great job with the design with the baseballs, and of course the gloves are the thing, and the fact that people can come here and get your glove custom made is pretty special. You can hit here, too. So I think this will be a big hit.
As we've got a list here of the position players, the guys who've won is on this side
on
of
the side.
The platform. But here's Ozzie Smith with his 13 gold gloves at shortstop.
Was that in a row?
No, 11. Did you win 8 in a row?
No.
13
total.
Yeah, total. 13,
yeah. Were
13
they all,
in a row.
All in a row? Okay.
Yeah,
pretty good. But then you got Hernandez over at first.
Keith.
And whenever we have the argument about, and it really isn't an argument, the discussion about the best defensive infield of all time, when you start with the best shortstop and the best first baseman, I think that pretty tells a story, doesn't it?
That was pretty good. I tell people that you win gold gloves, but you win them because of other people. And Keith certainly was a big part of my success or my run at gold gloves, because when you have the confidence to throw over there and know that there's a 99.9% chance that the ball's going to be caught no matter how it's thrown, you don't have to worry about, you know, making it a perfect throw. And with the way guys could run on AstroTurf and stuff, you know, sometimes you just had to get rid of it. But he was the best over there, and he was the best over there because he could cover from the from first base all the way to the third base line, which takes the pitcher completely out of the play.
So bunting was obviously huge.
Very, very big. He wasn't afraid to throw to another base.
Exactly.
And you get so many guys now that they their arms are questionable, so they don't take the chance at throwing to another base. But Keith would charge the third base line when we knew the particular bump play was on to get the guy at third base or get the guy at second base.
Left-handed thrower.
Left-handed thrower.
That's
and
big.
Wasn't afraid to throw. And it's just a great guy to play with.
Oz, do you think that, and you're probably biased with this, but this is my opinion,
mm-hmm.
Hernandez, Ozzie, Obergefell, best defensive infield in baseball history?
Without a doubt. I mean, we don't run around and say that. You know, we let people argue about all of that.
That guy's like I said.
Yeah, but certainly for us, you know, we feel that those four guys over the long haul of 162-game schedule probably played as good or as consistent as any four players to ever play together.
How much was chemistry a part of that? There has to be, obviously, at second and short, there's concert between the Keystone combo, but what about as a group?
Well, as a group, you move as a group. Mm-hmm. And so if I moved, I told you I moved. If you move, you told me you moved. So we moved as a unit. And we talk about today, you talk about shifts and all of that stuff. Well, we didn't play giant shifts, but it made it easier when we all moved together. You know, you didn't have to, it didn't have to be, well, I'm going to take the third baseman and put him at second base. I understand all of that. If you're going to move, I don't want to take you out of your position, you know, make you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So if you shift, you shift as a unit, and that's what we did.
I've interviewed you a million times, mm-hmm. and I think one question I haven't asked is how you came up with the trapeze.
Well, you know, when I...
And we're talking for listeners, trapeze glove.
Trapeze glove. The very first glove that I had was a Stan Musial, and it was a trapeze. And so I fell in love with that glove. And as time went along, I wore the pocket out. And so when I got to the big leagues, they had discontinued the trapeze. And so I sent it in, and I'm wishing now I'd have kept that thing. I sent it in and to get it repaired. And never got it back, and they started making the glove again.
Is that how it all happened?
That's how it happened.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Now, we have a lot.
They call it a six finger.
Yeah.
Which is cheating, I guess. You know.
No, it's not.
Antonio Alfonseca.
Here's a simple question. A lot of moms and dads are listening. A lot of kids are listening.
Uh-huh.
Best way to break in a glove?
Well, what I usually do, because I use my glove kind of stiff, I just use it to change direction, change energy and momentum. But the tender spot in your hand, right here in the middle of your hand.
Sure, the palm.
The palm. So you want that as soft as possible. So you can feel. Feel is very, very important. And so I would take baby oil. I would take lanolin and rub it in there. And the outside of my glove is always stiff. But if you put your hand in, if I put my hand in and I take it out, this is the way it's
sure.
formed, just like the glove. You know, so if I sit it down, it's that form. And I always put a ball in there when I travel, so that was always formed, that the pocket was always formed around the ball. And so a lot of times when I'm talking to kids, you know, when you fold a glove like that, you decrease the chance of that ball going in there. So you want it as round as possible, so that if you don't catch it square, it hits in there, and with your hand, you have a chance to keep it in.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't put it under the mattress,
no,
is what
I don't
you're saying.
You don't flatten it under the mattress.
Okay.
You sit it up. And I hear people, I had my buddy in Augusta said when he was small, you know, he'd dump it in water. Well, what happens over the long haul of a season, especially here in St. Louis where it was hot in the summertime, you get waterlogged, so it gets heavy. Mm-hmm. And feel is such a part of what I did that I would probably go to maybe two, maybe three gloves during the course of a hot summer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we got to ask this. Did you ever tell Stan that your first glove was a Stan Musial glove?
I don't know if we ever talked about that. But, yeah, that was the first name glove that I had.
That's pretty awesome. Hey, what have you thought of the Cardinals playing small ball so far?
It's the way, I think for us here that had a chance to watch baseball in the 80s, we understood the importance of it. Now, you know, the game has changed a little bit, and, you know, people want to see power and all that stuff, and that's all fine and good. But if you're going to win and you're going to win consistently, you got to be able to do the little things. Mm-hmm. If you build your team from a power standpoint, power can be shut off. Okay, now what happens when the power is shut off? You've got to be able to generate offense when the power is shut off.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to be able to do those little things. It's those little things that you do every day that's going to give you the best chance to win.
Ozzie, I always took something from your late Hall of Fame friend Joe Morgan mm-hmm. when he was talking about pitching. He said, you can make a run. You can't make pitching, but you can always find a way, if you're a good team, to make a run.
To make a run. I mean, and the Dodgers did that for years. Mm-hmm. You know, a walk, stolen base, ground ball, mm-hmm. run. Okay, so if you do those things consistently – And you got to put the ball into play. You can't put pressure on a defense if you're striking out. You know, so that becomes very, very important. And sometimes just putting the ball in play gets you a run.
So many years, it was amazing. We had all these Hall of Famers. We had Stan. We had Red. And God bless their souls. They moved on. And now you are kind of the face of the Hall of Famers here in St. Louis. Do you feel that the torch has been passed and that you're kind of the leader and the face of what this is all about?
Yeah, you know what? It's just
hopefully
kind of a natural.
I mean.
Yeah, it's just kind of a natural transition. You know, you hate to lose guys like that, you know, because they're so important to everything that happens here from a baseball standpoint, and we lost them all so quick. I mean, it's like it happened overnight.
Bob and Lou, it was so fast.
Yeah, it went so fast, and you know, and sometimes I think you know you. I'm not going to say you don't appreciate it, because I certainly did, you know, the little times that we had to spend together and stuff. And I think a lot of people miss that connection that we have with the group of Hall of Famers. And we had a pretty big contingent up in Cooperstown, too.
Yeah. And the other thing about it, and I don't want to get maudlin here, but with that specific group, when Red was mobile, you could see Red at a grocery store.
That's
right. You would see Lou around town. You see Ozzie. So it's different now because Albert's not going to be here and Yachty's not going to be here. The guys that are Hall of Famers, we aren't going to see them on an everyday basis.
That's right. And we've gotten away from it. And I think that's part of what makes St. Louis so special is that the guys were all a part of a community. Mm-hmm. That's where the game's changed a lot, too. You know, guys change teams so much now that they don't become a part of a community. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, guys were a part of the community, and people loved it.
This may be a crazy question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because mm-hmm. you always treat me well, and if I ask you a dumb question, you make sure that you give me a good answer. So I'll ask you this question.
There's never any dumb questions.
Out of the 13 Gold Gloves, is there one year that you're more proud of than others? You know, you dealt with the throwing, you dealt with different things towards the tail end of your career, and you still had the amazing range. But was there one Gold Glove one year that stands out more than another?
Not really. As time went on, you know.
You're supposed to say, Dan, that's a great question.
That is a great question, Dan.
Okay, thank
by the
you.
By the way, that's never been asked. That's never been asked. But, you know, for me, winning that first one was important, you know, because that's what I was noted for. That first one was very important. The last one was important because it came with a lot more adversity. You know, I had to change
and
the way.
That's what I was asking.
I had to change the way that I went about it. And when you say change, you know, people say, well, you know, it wasn't that drastic, because what happens with the body is it makes whatever adjustments it has to make. One of the things that I'm most proud of is the fact that I was still able to win Gold Gloves when I still had a torn rotator cuff. And I think that speaks to, you know, how the body changes and makes its adjustments. You know, I couldn't get up here, so everything had to be done down here, which is more of a natural way of throwing anyway. So it just kind of enhanced that ability to do that. You just strengthen that. And, you know, I learned all of the internal, external, sword in, sort of. It's all of those exercises and the work that had to be done day in and day out to be able to go out there and still perform, because people, when they pay their money, they expect to see a show. And I knew that. You know, there were many days that I knew I only had one long throw in me. So I had to keep myself in a position to hopefully be able to make that play that hopefully saves or win a game.
I love that you say they pay their money to see a show.
Yes.
Who did you learn that from, or was that just something that you felt that's incumbent on me as a pro athlete?
I'm a pro, man. Yeah. If I'm a professional, then, you know, I got to conduct myself as a professional every day. And I tell people that winning is much more than getting a big hit or making a great play. Winning is being there psychologically for your team. You know, my being back there at 75 to 80%, psychologically for my pitching staff, may be better than somebody else at 100.
That's great.
I was laughing because I was thinking, yeah, I'll play baseball with the rotator cuff, but then I if it starts messing with my golf game, I'm going to have surgery.
That's when I had surgery. It started messing with my golf game. I thought, something's wrong here.
So how is it doing?
Oh, it's great now.
So
it's great. I'm fine now. You know, when I met Mackie Shillstone back in 1985 and I went down there and started working with him, you know, we started really working to protect the area and stuff, and I finally had the surgery to get it shaved down, because, you know, the labrum and all that stuff was all like frizzy chicken.
Sure.
So they just got that shaved down to where I could get back up here. And as you can see now, boy, I might be able to go out there and throw a little bit now. Not as hard, but I'm 70 years old.
I've said it. If they put you out there for a few innings, they would not drop that much. I've watched you in fantasy camp. You can still pick it. You've got range.
Somebody asked me the other day, they said, you know, if you were like playing today, you know, how would you be? I said, I'd probably be in the top five, but hell, I'm 70 years old.
All right.
That's awesome. Ozzie Smith is with us at the Rawlings Experience. Okay, a couple more things. Number one, there's an awesome mural. It's got Jeter and Jackie and Koufax and Reggie and Ripken and Trout and Mickey Mantle and Nolan Ryan. You've been in the Hall of Fame now for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
When you went into the Hall of Fame and you're looking around, maybe the dinner before or whatever, was there one person where you said, wow, I am in the same club as that person?
I'm going to tell you. I grew up in Los Angeles, and I had, you know, I had a chance to watch, as Mike Ball slipping in, I had a chance to watch Koufax. I had a chance to watch Drysdale. And these were people that were on a pedestal, you know. And I'm at the Hall of Fame, and I look up, here comes Sandy Koufax. And this was probably my second year. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there. I don't think he was there the first year. But here comes Sandy Koufax. He still looks great. And wow. And that was really, he and Willie Mays, probably two of the guys that really, really had an impact on me emotionally, you know, when you see him. Not that the other guys didn't, but these two guys here really, really stood out.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It is, yeah.
I've always said, Ozzy, you are my hero, okay? So I get to embarrass you a little bit, I always do.
You know
what I'm about to say.
You do.
You get to meet your heroes, and sometimes they let you down. You have surpassed that.
Well, thank you, Dan. And, you know, you're a good friend, man, and I appreciate it and love you.
Love you too, buddy.
You're awesome. One other quick thing here. If Victor Scott calls you today and says, Ozzy, I'm hitting 071, what would you recommend I do? What do you recommend that Victor Scott does here early in his career?
Well, here again, it's all about being able to put the ball in play. You know, as long as you're putting the ball, when you have, he has a constant speed. Mm-hmm. Speed kills. So it starts with learning to be able to keep the ball in play. Keep the ball out of the air. Mm-hmm. Put the ball in play, because they know that if you get on, that could be a double. So the pressure is always on them. So now you just have to become that contact guy, and you start slow. Batting cage, you got to spend countless hours in the batting cage. It's just like golf now, you know. You're not going to be a good golfer if you don't hit balls. Mm-hmm. And it's not until after you hit 5,000 balls that it even start making any sense. You know, so you got to spend that time of putting the ball in play and having an understanding of what type of offensive player you're going to be, knowing that you're not a power guy. That's not my thing. So now I have to think of using the whole field. I can't. What's happened with analytics is that they've cut the field down, your level of success down, because you can only do it through here. You got to be able to use the whole field. And your great hitters, you watch your great hitters. If you go to and watch batting practice, you make an evaluation of a hitter by the way he takes batting practice. Great hitters don't come up there and the first thing they do is pull the ball. The first thing they do is they hit that ball the other way.
Mm-hmm. Hit the ball the other way. Stay on it, hit it the other way.
Hit it the other way. Yep. And when things are going bad, you really have to concentrate on hitting the ball the other way, because that guy is going to pitch to your weakness. He's not going to pitch to your strength.
Right.
So your strength is probably going to be that you can't hit the ball that way. So you got to work hard at learning to hit the ball that way, even when they throw it in here, because there may be situations where they're trying to get you here. And if you develop the ability to hit the ball the other way, you take away everything that he has. You make him start thinking. When he's a robot, he doesn't have to think. It's automatic. You know, that's easy. But you got to force him to have to think, well, I know I can't throw it here. I know I can't throw it there. And when you get him in that situation there, you have the upper hand. And so I would just say go down to the cage. And, they got one of the – and I'm not trying to tell them hitting instructing. They got one of the best guys. They got a guy there that was a batting champion.
Go see Willie.
If you just let him work. He's going to get it right.
Yep.
If you just let it work. But, here again, I'm not down there enough to be able to say this or that. But if you ask me, I'm going to tell you that this is what you need to do. You need to get in that cage, get you a tee, work on that tee, get you a little mallet, learn to hit that ball with a little mallet, go from a little mallet to a little hammer to where you hit line drives.
So great. We aren't talking launch angle here.
No, launch angle. You know, one of the things that I learned about hitting was that, you know, when I was in San Diego, I always talk about, well, swing down. Well, okay, I swing down, and I hit the ball. I make contact. Boom, hit that little ground ball to second base. They throw you out. And it wasn't until I had an understanding that we start down. You start down with your swing. You start from up here. You start down, but it levels out.
Yeah, there
you
go.
It doesn't continue to go. You start down in the zone and you level it out. And when I started understanding that, then it all made sense. But some things you got to figure out yourself.
Yep, right.
Mr. Gold Glove, Ozzy Smith, with us at the Rawlings Experience at Westport Plaza. Thanks so much for stopping by.
All right, thank you guys. All right, enjoy listening to you guys.
You're the best.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Oz.
Thank you.
The great Ozzy Smith, the Hall of Famer, with us on 101 ESPN.